However, you must look at the body in the way you normally do. Otherwise, the investigation becomes too nebulous and the practice doesn't progress properly. The first aim of the practice is to discover for yourself the body's repulsive nature, repulsive in the sense that it doesn't reflect the nice image you have of yourself. This discovery counters the normal view that the body is an attractive and desirable part of who you are, a part that deserves your constant fondness and attention. On the other hand, you also understand that the body is a necessary and valuable instrument, because without it, you do not have a physical basis for your mental faculties. Without a physical body, you would not have access to the faculties of thinking and recollection. There'd be just bare knowing, and that's all. Therefore, you must have the body to function. So, although it is seen as undesirable, you are also aware of its necessity. As long as you maintain that balanced view of the body in your practice, you can avoid negative states of alienation and aversion. Although it's up to each individual to decide the best method to use for body contemplation, starting with hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin usually provides a very good basis. If you feel you would rather investigate the body as arms, legs, head, organs, and so on, that's quite a legitimate practice too. Reflecting on how the human body is merely a combination of various parts, it's not a completely homogeneous entity at all. Apart from the head, most bodily parts can be cut off and the body will continue to function. An enormous amount can be removed from the body without death occurring. Then you can reflect, if I refer to this as my body, what about this arm? Is it mine? If it's cut off, is it still mine? So you begin body contemplation by focusing on the parts that make up the body. Head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, bones, and so on. You can either mentally visualize each one or focus your attention on the location of each part, whichever you prefer. This exercise is the training for wisdom, not the wisdom itself. When you keep practicing in this manner, probing and questioning continuously over a long time, you will suddenly see one of the body parts from a totally different angle. It's as though you see the full implications of its relation to the realms of mind and matter. Take skin, for example. You know its characteristics and its basic functions. Skin is a thin layer of surface tissue that is necessary to protect the internal organs from exposure and maintain the life of the body. You are aware of all that, but what are the implications of skin as far as your notions of self are concerned? This is what the training for wisdom is trying to uncover. In the end, you realize that skin is just part of the world. It comes from the world and it goes back to the world. It isn't you. There is nothing of you in it. How could it be you? What you cling to as an internal, integral part of your self-identity is merely a perishable physical substance. When you see these implications clearly, it feels almost as though you are giving up a cherished part of yourself. Seeing the implications and letting go of the attachment is the work of wisdom. It means knowing directly that the skin is not self, not merely thinking about it. Skin couldn't be self. It has no relation to self. That is one method used to overcome attachment to the body. Without developing your faculty of wisdom, you are unaware of how much attachment you have for it. You don't realize how much your self-identity is bound up with the body. For your own physical and mental welfare, it's very important to overcome that attachment. Another effective method for overcoming bodily attachment is the asubha contemplation. The asubha contemplation entails focusing on the human body's inherently impure and loathsome nature. Much of our discontent comes from taking the body as the basis of who we are. It's a central feature of our self-identity. Because of this deep-seated notion, we project a definite sense of self into all our actions. We deliberately plan our whole lives around desires related to the body. By contemplating the body's impure nature, we can experience it as inherently unstable, impermanent, and repulsive. In that way, we can reduce the craving built up around the body until eventually we are able to free ourselves from the strong sense of self associated with it. Because the skin so easily fools us with its deceptive appearance, it deserves a very careful examination. This thin layer of tissue covers the flesh and internal organs of the body. Although at a glance it may appear clean and attractive, closer inspection shows a scaly, wrinkled layer that exudes sweat and grease. Only constant washing and cleaning make it bearable to live with. After thoroughly investigating the outer layer, mentally strip off the skin and investigate the internal organs, following whatever method best suits your natural temperament. As you contemplate the body, certain parts or characteristics should begin to stand out and catch your attention. You should focus special attention on those parts. When you investigate deeply into just one body part until seeing its true nature clearly with wisdom, you will be able to extend that understanding to include the entire body, because all bodily substance has the same nature. It's filthy, disgusting, and repulsive through and through. No desirable and satisfactory personal identity can be found there. But you must understand very, very clearly that the objective of this contemplation is not to stir up aversion for the body. That would be wrong. You only want to see its loathsome nature. It's rather like opening your refrigerator and seeing a rotten piece of meat that has been there the last 5 weeks. You'd feel it was repulsive, but you wouldn't feel hatred for it. You just take it out and drop it in the garbage. That's all. Likewise, with the body, it isn't hatred you want. That's wrong. You want the experience of loathsomeness, a feeling of dismay that you've grasped this body at birth, that you're bound to this body, and that you have to live with it until it dies. Still, while you maintain the body, you have an opportunity to see the Dhamma. In that sense, it's quite valuable. You must use it in the right way to overcome your delusion. This is the true purpose of body contemplation. After practicing the Asubha contemplation intensively, you may later feel irritable or even angry for no apparent reason. This is a reaction to the body contemplation itself. When your deeply ingrained views of physical identity are probed and questioned, the internal forces of delusion build up a feeling of irritation or annoyance. You may feel like a bear with a sword on its head, as they say. In order to quell those negative emotions, you should combine body contemplation with another practice like anapanasati or metta to calm down and cool off. This is consistent with what the Buddha taught. He said that when one does body practice, one should do anapanasati as well. The body is an interesting object to investigate. You can divide up the body in various ways. Another way is to investigate the body in terms of the physical elements of earth, water, fire, and air. The natural world around us appears to be very real and solid, but it only appears that way because our bodies are also composed of the same natural material elements. Fundamentally, there is no difference between the makeup of the human body and the makeup of the physical world. In modern terms, they both consist of atoms and molecules. You should look at the body from that angle and reflect on it. You should also look at the body with the understanding that the four elements of earth, water, fire, and air are actually just symbolic representations. In examining matter, scientists have never found an earth element anywhere, nor have they found air, water, or fire elements. They do not exist as actual physical properties. In fact, contemplation of the four physical elements is a psychological method of analyzing matter. And the mind is the main requirement for making the analysis. You have to contemplate those characteristics subjectively. The mind uses concepts about earth, water, fire, and air to represent material qualities such as solidity, fluidity, heat, and motion, so as to understand the body on a more subtle level. Another interesting approach to body contemplation is to ask, how is the body known? How is it experienced? The answer is that we know the body through feeling. It's feeling that informs us about our bodies. It's difficult to experience the body any other way. Of course, we can think in terms of the body's constituent parts and so on. These are things we know about because we can see them. But from the perspective of an internal experience, we actually know the body through feeling and sensation. Because of that, the body we know is really a feeling body. That feeling body is a subtle body that's projected into our physical form. Our minds contact the physical body through that projection, so we don't actually know the physical body directly. When we want to investigate our bodies, we must turn to sensations to guide the way. The internal makeup of the physical body is known only by means of a mental image, a concept that comes from seeing pictures depicting what the various parts look like. All of those parts combine to make up the physical body, but that is not the body we know internally. When we contemplate the body by examining those bits and pieces that make it up, we are working with the mental picture of the body. When we contemplate the corresponding feeling body, we may find that the feelings inside paint quite a different overall picture of the body, and quite a different understanding of what makes up the body as well. That's why it's important to realize that feeling is the most important aspect of our knowledge of the body. For example, when you feel a pain in your foot, the source of the pain appears to be located in the foot. In fact, sensory impulses are transmitted from the foot to some mechanism in the brain, which projects the experience of pain onto the image of the foot in the feeling body. So the experience of pain takes place in the mind's image of the body, which is mentally superimposed on the physical form. We feel the painful sensation in the foot only because our instincts tell us it must be there. In the same manner, the whole body is mirrored in a network of sensations. For that reason, the feeling body is very important. It's the one we know. It is the source of our perceptions of the physical body. If the above method of investigating the body works, then use it. By analyzing the body in this way, we are seeking to see this body for what it really is and drop our attachment to it. In doing so, we realize that our physical body is not so important. It's just a conglomeration of material substances that will one day be reabsorbed into the physical environment. The question then is, why do you grasp at it? People grasp at bodies because they imagine themselves to be secure in bodies, even though the body is not a secure refuge. It is always subject to the uncertainty of disease, old age, and death. At the same time, the body is a very sensitive organism. It relies upon a suitable environment, which means it must have air to breathe, temperatures that are reasonable for human life, and protection from dangers in its environment. All of these factors are necessary. If they are not available, or if they change, the body will perish. Because our bodies are so inherently vulnerable, we should really be looking for security in other ways. When we realize that, in fact, the body does not offer us the security that we want, we should examine the nature of that insecurity to see if there is a better way to find a secure refuge than grasping at the human body. When people identify with their bodies, they become concerned about them. Because the body is the basis of their life, they are afraid of losing that base. The body is like a home they can come back to. When their minds go whizzing off somewhere, they can always come back to home base. It anchors them so they feel secure. If the base wasn't there, where could they come back to? There'd be nowhere to return to. When people feel they are drifting, they want to find a foothold, an anchor to hold them firm. Because every part of the body is constantly changing, it is not reliable enough to provide such a secure refuge. Our personal stake in it puts us under its unstable influence. Whatever happens to the body is then experienced as happening to us. When it becomes sick, we become worried and depressed. If the body gets injured, we're distraught. We're distraught because we're attached to the body, thinking of it as an integral part of who we are. When it dies, we're suddenly homeless. Because of our attachment, whatever happens to it happens to us. Once we realize what the body's true nature really is, we are freed from our attachment to it. Then what happens to the body is something that happens separately, externally. It's as though somebody else's body is injured or sick. Pain is experienced in the body, but there is no concern about the pain. It isn't me, it isn't mine. Because it isn't me or mine, it never again has the same sway over our emotions. It no longer pulls us along with it. The mind remains separate and free. Being separate and free, it is also secure. It knows that the illusion has been at least partially eliminated. It knows that whatever happens, it won't go in the wrong way. It won't fall back. This is the result we are working for in body contemplation. Once you have examined the body and realize that it is not yourself, when something happens to the body, you are not concerned about it in the same way as before. You know that it's not happening to you. You realize that, although it's happening to the body, that body is not you. Although the physical condition may be unpleasant, the unpleasantness is merely the body's unpleasantness. You are not affected. The purpose of body contemplation is to realize that the body is not you, nor does it belong to you. The body belongs to the natural world. You have grasped at the body and continue to grasp at it by maintaining it in good condition. But the time will come when that body has to return to the world of nature. When you truly realize in yourself that the body is merely a temporary home, something you have on loan, so to speak, then concern for the body drops away. Fear of death also drops away, because you realize that death is simply the death of the physical body. This understanding is not a matter of being alienated from your physical body. Rather, it is seeing with wisdom the truth about its natural state. There are many different forms of body contemplation, but regardless of which method you use, the basic purpose of the meditation practice is to learn to see the body in the light of truth, and thus understand its true nature. This is the crux of the matter. By seeing it for what it is, you realize that it isn't self. The fundamental realization transforms your whole perspective. Having realized that the body is not self, you simply drop it. Eventually, you see that all of life is just shadows, like images flickering on a cinema screen. The knowledge you gain from seeing the truth is very powerful. At the time of death, when the body dies, you know that it's not you that dies. By bringing you to this realization, body contemplation gives you a great deal of spiritual and emotional strength and relieves the mind of an enormous burden, both now and in the future.
Questions, comments?
I have a question about, I've been reading several of the forest masters in the Thai tradition, mm-hmm. and their body contemplation, they emphasize the first five a lot. The hair, the teeth, the nails, and the skin. Is that because those are more obvious to contemplate?
That's probably the main reason, in the sense that those are the visible things that we, in terms of the body, that we see. Like when we see somebody, wherever, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin. That's what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, in that way, it's the physical manifestation or the very clear things that we can see visually. Another aspect of it is that just in terms of tradition, the Buddha placed in the ordination for novice, the ordination comprises a taking of refuge, taking the precepts, and then receiving the first meditation. And the first meditation is, a body contemplation with hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin forward, and then back again. So that's you're introduced to that as the first meditation subject to for contemplation. So there's in terms of the tradition going back to very ancient times, and there's a lot of importance placed on.
Those are all also all of them dead.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah.
You've been reading one for bad?
I probably heard it maybe from Ajahn Samuel's reading or something like that.
The forest masters also put a lot of emphasis on body contemplation before mind, or maybe I was just reading Ajahn Dun, and he puts more of an emphasis on that, or would you say in general all the that you really need a deeper contemplation of the body before you can go deeper with the mind?
Yes. I mean, one of the things is that, I mean, it's just so, what do you say, it's so grounding, tangible. The mind is so untrustworthy and ephemeral. It can change so quickly. Either the mood or the thoughts that we have or the opinion that comes out can just change so quickly. So that having the contemplation of the body helps to get this solid kind of anchor or solid base, so that we can start to contemplate from that and ground ourselves in a consistency that's there, that's very, very helpful.
Do you believe you really have to let go of the body before you can go deep into mind contemplation?
Well, the thing is not really. I mean, I don't believe anything. You know, in the sense of there being, you know, an absolute way that everybody has to follow. But it's just really helpful when you've got the body to contemplate that you'll get an insight into the mind, because it's inseparable, really. There is in Western religion, Western philosophy, there's a very strong dichotomy between body and mind. And I don't think there's that same split or division in Buddhist practice. It's all a piece, but the body being more solid, more material, then it's clearer, more substantial for investigation. So that then, in terms of thinking of body and mind, and it's always from the very earliest teachings, say the Buddha taught about six senses, so that sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, which are associated with the body, and the mind itself. But they was never separated as as something completely distinct from each other. Or the five khandhas of body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness. And the Buddha's very explicit in saying, you know, these are conjoined, they're not disjoined, they function together.
But we still have to contemplate nama and rupa.
Yes.
Separate. So there's...
You contemplate nama and rupa, but that's in its most basic. But they're not seen as... they can't exist apart from each other. Nama and rupa can't really exist independent of each other.
In the book of Longpo, the small one, Longpo, talking about if the body is happy, the mind's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're sick, you know, it's pretty hard because the body's not happy. You know, so it's pretty tough to meditate, isn't it?
It's certainly tough, but it's also, you have to get used to it and suck it up. It's going to happen. But it is difficult.
Yes.
But that's why it's so important to do the contemplations and do the reflections, because when the time comes, if you haven't laid a foundation, then it's really overwhelming. If you based your mental, emotional, spiritual well-being on being healthy and comfortable and physically at ease, then you're very, very vulnerable. So that contemplation is really an important part of laying a good foundation for a resilience of mind.
I just mean that Mr. Rumpa was saying the Tesna said Rumpa was a little bit surprised at one point that the body's happy, the mind's happy. Lumpur was thinking about the other way around.
Oh, right.
Remember
right.
that one?
Yeah. No, but... It doesn't surprise me. Well, I say a lot of things. But it's not inconsistent with what I was told to say. But I think it is, you know, it's very, 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 very true in the sense of when we really are comfortable. It's like, you know, we're, you know, you've just had a good meal, you're relaxed, and the mind's happy. You've basically physically made yourself. In the same way that when we pay attention to physically relaxing, physically settling, physically paying attention to the body process, the breath process. And the mind's brightened. So the body's happy, the mind brightened.
I wonder if you've spoken in the past about how even if we're not Jewish or Christian, we have that as our sort of groundwork, that Judeo-Christian framework as far as how we see ourselves in the world. And you just mentioned the sort of split, the way the Westerners tend to split the sort of body and the mental processes. And I'm wondering, I haven't thought about that too much, because certainly Buddhism, the split is the knowing, the awareness, like Lumbar Chats is oil and water, mm-hmm. sort of the khandhas in the mind. But I guess I'm wondering, do you think that's sort of similar? Like, that all of us have that sort of underlying way that we view?
I think it's pretty deeply ingrained. And just the, absolutely. Like, it's a cultural perspective that is intrinsic to our upbringing. And we hear it all the time. You know, whether you absorb it from everything. Yeah?
There's also, you know, significant there where Ajahn was talking about, you know, like a sort of practice, not of really cultivating like aversion and
repulsion.
Right. I was with Ajahn Kalyana in Thailand. I went to an autopsy. And he was making the exact point, you know, like when we were there, like, he's like, you know, memorize all the organs so, you know, so you can, that's what you're doing, so it's like you know where they are in your own body, and it's actually bringing a peaceful state of mind, because you actually know what's in there.
Yeah.
Not to create, he says, if you create a version, you're not going to want to go back to that meditation.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be emphasized enough that the body contemplations are not for creating aversion to the body or a sense of there was one monk who lived in Bangkok, and he got sort of it was just picked up in an extreme way, and he'd go to autopsies every week at Sri Lanka Hospital, and he finally banned him. He's kind of ghoulish. You know? I mean, he was just this miserable character. liberation. You know, this, if I can just kind of, you know, feel it's just so disgusting and so awful and cultivate enough distaste for it, then I'll be liberated, and it's really not that way at all. You're creating a familiarity and a disenchantment. But those qualities of dispassion, disenchantment are incredibly bright states of mind, wholesome states of mind.